So, with that said, let me ask you a question. Have you ever worked hard at a project for a while, only to later grow weary of doing it? That's partly because most projects are easier to start than to finish, right? Think of New Year's resolutions. We've all done those, right? Wills are resolved and sealed, and lists are compiled at the beginning of every year. But how few of them are completed by year's end? What about diets? Ever been on a diet? They're much easier to start than to complete, aren't they? But what about exercise? It's easy to join the gym, but to keep doing workouts 3 times a week, that can be difficult. And then there's marriage. Oh, how relatively easy to say, "I do," and make vows on your wedding day, but how hard to keep those vows with the passing of time. And of course, there are all kinds of reasons why it's harder to start these kinds of things than to finish them, right? One is human weakness. Another, a lack of discipline, insufficient resolve, or obstacles that arise and get in the way of a strong finish for the project. And surprisingly, sometimes these obstacles are quite insignificant things. This seems to be what happened in today's text passage in Nehemiah chapter 4, where after a strong start to the wall rebuilding project led by Nehemiah in the city of Jerusalem, some of the Jews under his leadership began to grow weary with something that was strewn in and around their workplace, namely, in verse 10, did you notice? Too much rubbish. Well, the theme of today's text passage is obstacles to rebuilding. And there are 3 main points that relate to this theme. They're printed on the right-hand side of your bulletin, so follow along as I read them in your hearing. First, in verse 10, after a successful start, the Jews grew weary with the work of rebuilding. And second, in verses 11 and 12, Nehemiah's adversaries were intent on destroying the rebuilding project and bringing it to an end. And third and last, in verses 13 to 23, we have Nehemiah's threefold plan to overcome the rebuilding obstacles. Before we consider those points, let's first remember from last week that the context and setting of this passage is contained in those first 9 verses of chapter number 4 leading up to 10, which begins today's text and goes all the way to the end of the chapter. In those verses, you recall, we saw how Nehemiah modeled leadership in his God-assigned task of rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. But he also experienced considerable opposition to his task, didn't he? In fact, Nehemiah's rebuilding efforts were vigorously opposed and ridiculed by the Jews' many enemies. And that opposition intensified as his rebuilding efforts became more successful. And Nehemiah also modeled the right way to respond to his opponents by demonstrating that prayer and watchfulness are the proper responses to those who seek to disrupt the will and the work of God. This, therefore, must be our Christian response in our constant spiritual warfare against the enemies of our souls, pictured in the fourth chapter as the enemies that surrounded the city of Jerusalem. You remember? Sanballat and the Samaritans were on the north side, Geshem and the Arabs on the south, the Ashdodites and Philistines to the east, and Tobiah and the Ammonites to the west. However, verse 6 says that despite being surrounded on all sides by enemies, yet the Jews under Nehemiah's leadership had a mind to work, and that the entire wall was joined together at this point in time. About halfway, they'd made such progress in such a short period of time. And therefore, because of that progress, according to verse 9, the Jews prayed to their God and also set a watch against their enemies day and night. But all their problems hadn't dissolved. In fact, the rest of chapter 4 and beyond that, in chapter 5 and 6, beginning here at verse 10, indicates that there were some obstacles that arose that got in the way of a strong finish for the project. Obstacles that caused the Jews to grow weary of rebuilding. Again, the first point is taken from verse 10, which is this, on your outline, look at it. After a successful start, the Jews grew weary with the work of rebuilding. Verse 10, then Judah said, he's a representative of the group, apparently, the strength of the laborers is failing, and there is so much rubbish that we are not able to build the wall. Now here's an example of a project that got off to a flying start, right? But then it got grounded. It started well, but now it was struggling to finish. The strength of the laborers was failing, and discouragement and weariness with the work of rebuilding the walls had settled in. You notice too what Judah, as representative of the Jews, attributed their failing strength to, namely, at the end of verse 10, to so much rubbish. I find it a little comical, don't you? So much rubbish strewn in and around their workplace. Apparently, Jerusalem's broken down walls had become dumping grounds for the city's residents. And evidently, there was so much rubbish near those walls that they felt that they were not able to build them. So this abundance of rubbish was an obstacle that caused the Jews to grow weary with the work of rebuilding. Now this made me think about the rubbish in our lives that can be an obstacle in the way of rebuilding. Let me ask you, are you in the process of rebuilding something? Are there broken down walls in your marriage, in your family, in your relationships, or your spiritual life? Are you trying now to rebuild them? Because if you are, then there can be a tendency to get focused on all the rubbish in your life. You might begin thinking that the walls of your life in the past were so badly broken down that now you can't fully do the work and the will of God. Oh, you've done some. You worked at it for a while, maybe. You've rebuilt it a little, but now you're weary and tired, and your strength is failing, and you can no longer do the work of rebuilding. And if that's how you're feeling, then you might conclude that you can't continue the work of rebuilding because there's so much rubbish and trash and filth and sin and bad habits that are still clinging to you. But here's the application that we can and should make from this. God never calls us to complete a task that we are unable to finish. Again, God never calls us to complete a task that we are unable to finish. Judah and some of the Jews had lost confidence. They'd lost confidence that they could complete the rebuilding project in Jerusalem. They had their excuse why they couldn't continue and complete the task that Nehemiah had given them. Too much rubbish, they said. However, they had all that was necessary to complete it, but they got their focus in the wrong place, off of the walls, off of the Lord, and onto the rubbish. The abundance of rubbish strewn everywhere in that city made them discouraged and doubtful that they could finish the job. And listen, God's people today can be derailed from growing in grace, moving forward, becoming sanctified, because they think that there's too much rubbish, too much trash and filth and sin from their past lives to successfully continue the work of rebuilding. However, God never calls His people to complete a task that they are unable to finish. God's called you to do it. He's going to see you through to the finish line, to the end. God gives us everything we need to complete the task that He gives us. Now, point number two arises from verses 11 and 12, which is this. Notice on your outline, Nehemiah's adversaries were intent on destroying the rebuilding project and bringing it to an end. Verse 11, look at it. And our very adversaries said, they will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease. So it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came that they told us 10 times, from whatever place you turn, they will be upon us. Now, as we saw last week, Nehemiah's adversaries were many, right? They were legion. And they literally surrounded the city of Jerusalem on all sides as they prepared to attack her. And together these adversaries had virtually isolated the city of Jerusalem. So Nehemiah and his people now took more radical measures to defend themselves while at the same time continuing the work of rebuilding. And you recall from last time that these threatening, hostile adversaries are pictures, think of them as pictures or types of the spiritual adversaries of every believer's soul. And if you're a believer, you know you have spiritual adversaries. If you're not a believer, you might not know that. Like Nehemiah's, our adversary's desire, according to verse 8, is to conspire together to come and attack and create confusion in our lives. And also in verse 11, the adversary's desire was to come into the midst of the Jews and kill and destroy them and cause their work of rebuilding to cease. And apparently, the adversary's wicked desire had spread throughout the region because verse 12 says, so it was when the Jews who dwelt near them came, that they told us 10 times, from whatever place you turn, whatever place you turn to, they will be upon us. In other words, our adversaries are everywhere. So wherever you go, and no matter which way you turn, your enemies will be upon you. Now, this was true for the Jews in the Old Testament community in Nehemiah's day, and it's also true for the Gentiles in the New Covenant community in our day. Now, foremost among the believers' enemies and adversaries is one in particular who the Scriptures repeatedly refer to as Satan. 52 times in Scripture, our adversary, the devil, is called Satan. And as our greatest adversary, he stands in opposition to everything that is holy. And as such, he is intent on destroying and bringing to naught every rebuilding effort of every Christian believer. And in addition to being called adversary, Satan is also called several other names that describe him as a murderer and a destroyer. For instance, John 8:44, Jesus called Satan a murderer. To the Jewish religious leaders, he said, "You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do." He was a murderer from the beginning. And in 1 Peter 5:8, Satan is likened to a ferocious lion who goes about seeking his prey. Be sober, be vigilant, because Peter says your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour and destroy. Also in the book of Revelation, Satan is called two names, which both mean destroyer: Apollyon and Abaddon. Revelation 9:11 says this, "And they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew was Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon." From the beginning of time, Satan has been filled, literally filled, with hatred towards God. And he has attempted to destroy, listen, he's attempted to destroy every good thing that God has done or purposed to do, especially the rebuilding efforts of his people. So the application is simply this: just as Nehemiah's adversaries were intent on destroying their rebuilding and bringing it to an end, so too are the enemies of our souls intent on doing exactly the same thing. Well, the third and last point taken from our text is from verses 13 and following, which is this. Number 3 on your outline: Nehemiah's threefold plan to overcome the rebuilding obstacles. Now, this last lengthy section of chapter 4 spans 11 verses, and in them are three things that Nehemiah instructed the Jews to do in order to overcome the obstacles for rebuilding. First, in verse 13, Nehemiah placed family units together and instructed them to carry weapons of war. Verse 13, look at it. "Therefore I positioned men behind the lower part of the wall at the openings, and I set the people according to their families with their swords their spears and their bows. So in the first place, and of great importance for rebuilding, is that the people were to be constantly prepared for warfare. And what a great picture of spiritual warfare and of the Christian's armor that also must be constantly put on. You're familiar, I'm sure, with Ephesians 6, where the Apostle Paul says it this way: "Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against" what? "Against the wiles, the trickery, the deceitfulness of the devil. Gird your waist with truth. Put on the breastplate of righteousness. Take the shield of faith and the helmet of salvation. And take the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, praying and being watchful." These are the weapons of spiritual warfare that Christians are to constantly carry and be armed with every day. So the second thing Nehemiah did to overcome his enemies, rebuilding obstacles, is mentioned in verse 14. Secondly, notice Nehemiah forbade the Jews to fear any of their enemies, but instead to stay focused on the Lord during the conflict. Look at verse 14. "And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them." Surrounded on all sides, right? "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." Nehemiah exhorted the people not to be afraid, but to look to the Lord for help and to remember His great and mighty attributes, which had provided victory and deliverance from their enemies in the past. So there's a simple but profoundly useful application here for us, namely this: whenever we face a situation that creates fear in our hearts, we must remind ourselves of God's greatness. If we walk by sight and view God through the problems and obstacles, then we will fail. But if we look at the obstacles through the greatness of God, then we will have confidence and succeed. This was David's approach when he faced Goliath, right? To the giant, what did he say? "The Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give you into our hands." Likewise, Nehemiah forbade the Jews to fear any of their enemies, but instead encouraged them to stay focused upon the Lord during the conflict. The third and last thing Nehemiah did to overcome his adversary's obstacles for rebuilding is mentioned in verse 15 all the way to the end of the chapter. And it's this: Nehemiah implemented a plan. Did you sense it as you were reading it? He implemented a plan for rebuilding that combined two things: work and warfare. Look at 15. "It happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us that God had brought their plot to nothing, that all of us returned to the wall, everyone to his work. So it was from that time on that half of my servants worked at construction, while the other half held the spears, the shields, the bows, and wore armor. And the leaders were behind all the house of Judah, those who built on the wall and those who carried burdens, loaded themselves so that with one hand they worked at construction and with the other they held a weapon. Every one of the builders had his sword girded at his side as he built. And the one who sounded the trumpet was beside me. Then I said to the nobles, the rulers, the rest of the people, the work is great and extensive, and we are separated far from one another on the wall. Whenever you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. So we labored in the work, and half of the men held the spears from daybreak until the stars appeared. And at the same time, I also said to the people, let each man and his servant stay at night in Jerusalem, that they may be our guard by night and a working party by day. So neither I, my brethren, my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me took off our clothes, except that everyone took them off for washing. Over and over again throughout this passage, we see Nehemiah implementing a plan for rebuilding that combined the elements of both work and warfare. And so, here's the application we can make from that. Building and battling are both normal parts of the Christian life. Again, building and battling are both normal parts of the Christian life. Don't ever let anybody lead you to believe or try to convince you that you can do without the battling part. There are some Christians who want to take that out of the equation completely. But the Christian life, if you're a Christian, you know it to be true, is warfare. It is a battle. And if you're not experiencing it, that ought to be like an alarm going off to warn you of something, that you're not in the battle, and you need to be. Nehemiah implemented a rebuilding plan that combined provisions for both building and battling. Half of the people worked on the wall, while the other half stood guard. The people who carried building materials also carried weapons, and the workers on the walls also carried swords. What's that all a picture of? Well, it's a picture of the normal Christian life that involves building and battling. Let me illustrate with this illustration. In 1865, the very famous Baptist preacher Charles Spurgeon, I'm sure many of you have heard him, he began publishing a magazine. It was called The Sword and Trowel. A trowel, as you might know, is a small handheld tool with a flat pointed blade used to apply and spread mortar or plaster. And therefore, the sword and trowel depicted a defensive weapon and a useful working tool, which was borrowed from the book and life of Nehemiah, according to Spurgeon. He described this publication as a record of combat with sin and labor for the Lord. This great man recognized that both building and battling are normal parts of the Christian life and experience. Hence the imagery of both a trowel and a sword. So with Spurgeon and Nehemiah, we must realize that it's not enough to simply build. It's not enough to simply build. We must also battle and be on guard, lest our adversary and enemies take back and seize what has been gained. Nehemiah implemented a plan for rebuilding that combined both work and and warfare, and we too must do the same. In conclusion, I want you to consider with me that the sacrificial death and resurrection of Jesus Christ has put an end forever to our adversary's ability to destroy God's people. It also ensures that the work of building God's kingdom and church will certainly be successful, and it will continue. In fact, it is so certain that Jesus himself promises in Matthew 16:18, "I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail or be victorious against it." And I would think that all God's people would say to that, let's pray.